Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is a Monday. Monday, March 28th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free on the internet at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. You can click the link, download it, print it out, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like. Absolutely free. It's just a simple PDF file. You don't have to even get put on a mailing list. Click the file, download it, and it's all yours to use as you wish. You can also download an app from your app store that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And the way to get access to that through either app store is to just type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C. And by the time you begin typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you tap on that, it will let you download that completely free and private app. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one, where people have been stepped through the use of that worksheet process, and those files can serve as a tutorial for you. In the event that you're not able to access this show live and call in, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, it will put the little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code, and we can have a conversation, or we can help step you through a worksheet process, or help you frame out different worksheets that you might do on your own at another time if you don't want to talk about the content of your worksheets on the radio. However, there have been a number of people who have been willing to do that, and as I said, those files are available for you to listen to, and they serve as a powerful series of tutorials on how to get good use out of this system, to turn any negative emotional experience you have into part of the infallible guidance system that can help you get where you want to go and have more peace and joy and contentment in your life and gratitude and more of the direct experience of your true nature as love. And it can also help you improve day-to-day your life by dramatically reducing the amount of time you spend in the negative emotional states, because what we use in this work is the alarm system. We use any negative emotional state we experience as part of an alarm system that wakes us up to the fact that we have, whether we are aware of it or not, we've stepped into an unproductive thought pattern, and that's the thing that's creating our emotions, not the people and things outside of us, not life going a different direction than what we had planned for the day. And when we are willing, when we're armed with these kinds of tools and we take 100% responsibility for the emotional states we create, they can become, as we said, a very powerful part of that internal guidance system that can help us course correct. And the sooner I course correct, the sooner I realize every time I have a negative emotional state that I'm the one creating it, the sooner I can take a breath, initiate the use of one of these tools, and choose differently. You know, I might choose an entirely different set of interpretations for the life events that are unfolding in front of me. And then I watch my emotional state transform in the moment or over a period of moments. And that's been, you know, that has resulted in me spending the tiniest fraction of time in my life in the experience of these negative emotions compared to what it was prior to learning these tools. So we encourage people to do that soon and often. Download the tools. Call us and ask about support for using these tools. Apply them in your life. And the reason we encourage people to do that soon and often is because, number one, our experience has been it improves the quality of our individual lives. Number two, it often leads people to have questions or comments or testimonials. And if you're so inclined to share any of those with us, please do. Give us a call at 563-999-3581. And once you're on the line listening on hold, then you can press 1, and it will let me know that you have a question or a comment. And this is a Monday, and so I'm opening the phone lines for that because we are in the middle of going through the way of mastery, slowly, carefully, methodically, some might say, and offering commentary as we go. And my experience has been that a number of these recordings of the first hour of Mind Shifters Radio since January 10th, when we began reading Through the Way of Mastery, several of those shows have called me to go back and listen repeatedly to what was flowing through me and what has helped me understand, literally at deeper levels, how to use this process as a set of tools. And, you know, the first one that prompted me to actually set up a different page on the website at mindshiftersacademy.org was February 4th. It was a Friday. And I don't know what it is about Fridays, but last Friday and the Friday before were both shows that call me to come back and listen again and again. I believe on the 18th it was a review of lessons 1 through 5, and I don't know what it was about this last Friday show, but it had a lot of messages in there for me about the use of the intellect and going back to that, what's supposed to be just a tool, but going back to it over and over again as though it's my savior and my highest guidance, and it isn't, as the Way of Mastery points out to us over and over again, beginning in the first lesson, it says, please understand that your intellect was intended to be a very simple servant of something more integrated, more connected, with greater potential for connecting you to a higher guidance. In this work, they call that the awakened heart, and they call it the witness. You can call it whatever you would like. I guess the thing that was coming home to me from Friday's recording was how important it is for me to watch the tendency to jump back into the intellectual processing and or to use the intellectual processing to answer the question, what should I do now? And that's just a trap. That's just the distraction. That's, you know, being a carpenter and letting the hammer decide what to do in every moment. And the hammer is just going to keep doing what it always does. It's going to hit things. Right. It's just going to come crashing down on something. And that's all my intellect is going to do. It's going to continue to churn back up and regurgitate to me various recombinations of, as this work calls it, the trivialities that have been shoved into it through my culture, through my family training, through my language, through the religions and philosophies that I've been exposed to, and what we're being led to understand is there is a lot more out there and inside us than just that churning of the intellectual processing. So, please feel free to make use of these archives. There are archives of every show for the last 11 plus years on whyagain.org. If you go to that website, whyagain.org, and you click on the microphone, it will take you to a page where you can scroll through the last 11 plus years of the Mindshifter Radio Archives. And the first 3 years, it was, or first 8 years, it was just 1 hour a day, 5 days a week. And for the last three, it's been 2 hours a day, 5 days a week. Another way to access the show specifically related to this Way of Mastery work and the archives of those shows is to go to the MindShiftersAcademy.org website. Well, you'll find a separate page where on one page is just the recordings of me reading as close to verbatim as I can the Way of Mastery lessons, the first 12 anyway. And then on another page it says, you know, Way of Mastery on Mindshifters Radio with commentary. There are the archives of the edited shows, just the first hour of the shows since January 10th. And that's what I was making reference to. It's been calling me to go back to several of the Friday shows since that began. And I'd love to hear any comments or questions before we go back into the Way of Mastery. We're somewhere in lesson six. And I got a nice comment or two from the people who had listened into Friday's show saying that it was very useful and powerful for them, and that was part of what prompted me to go back and listen. And If any of these shows are striking you in a particular way, we'd love to hear about that. You can call at 563-999-3581, or you can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. And send me an email about what's striking you, what's of most use to you, what new perspectives you might be getting, or maybe this is your first time being exposed to the Way of Mastery as a text and a tool. So no hands are up, so I will continue. We've got about 44 minutes left. Please feel free to put a hand up at any point in time during this next 45 minutes. Where we left off on Friday was in Lesson 6, where it says, it was trying to let us know about effortlessness. And what effortlessness means is simply that you abandon the resistance to what life, love, your creator, the flow of life, what it requires in each moment. So effortlessness, in my mind, is equated here with the same thing as allowance, which is, see, I can't really allow, but I can catch when I resist. I can use that conscious logical mind to wake me up to how the misuse of my conscious logical mind is disrupting my experience of life. It's creating a negative emotional experience. So in Lesson 5, when they introduced the term allowance, I said, you know, allow, what does that mean? Right? I don't know what it's, but I do know what it means to resist. I feel it. I feel the tension in my body. I feel the experience of the anger or the frustration or the fear or the guilt or the shame. I do know that. And so for my processing of this work, effortlessness means allowance, means scanning constantly, getting better and better at finding the earliest warning signs that I'm resisting the flow of life, that I'm using that conscious logical mind, which is this very, very simple servant, to say, I know better than God, I know better than life, I know better than love, I know better than the flow of creation, and what's happening right now, this should not be happening. And because this is happening, and I think it shouldn't be happening, and I generate all of this negative emotional experience, the moment I deny that I'm the one creating that negative emotional experience, as it points out to us in Lesson 3, instantly in that denial of my own ownership, my creation of my experience of life, my processes, the intellectual processes, jump in and create a picture about how the world around me or someone or something outside of me is creating my upset. And unless I come back to this 100% responsibility for the experiences I create in my life, I won't be able to see clearly, and all I will do is pour negative energy into my life. And I will be acting from that blindfolded, distorted, you know, stomping around in the minefield with blinders on. So effortlessness means simply that you abandon the resistance to what love, capital L love, requires in each moment. Effortlessness is the way of the kingdom. In the world, effortlessness means that you let down the wall that you have built between yourself and all of creation. You no longer resist the lived experience of relationship, whatever that is, relationship with a cloud, relationship with another person, relationship with a dog or a cat, relationship with April 15th when you write your government a check. Why not wrap it with Christmas paper and ribbons and send it off with much love? That's, you know, most people can't even imagine that. I can't believe how much money our government wastes, and I could do so much better with that. I had telling a story on Friday about a young man who was in here just using life events that he experienced as evidence that our government is wasting all of our money that we send it in taxes, and then generating rage right here in my office. The text goes on to say at the top of page 78, when you have learned to release the barriers or the walls between yourself and whatever is in front of you, when you open the door to your chakras, the energies, the body's energy centers, when you simply allow capital L love, life to be lived through you, you look upon another person or another situation or another thing and realize that nothing in this world has the power to hurt who you truly are. And nothing in this world has the power to take anything of value from you. Then you are free. If you remember to extend love, this energy of creation that you're made of, in each moment, that moment you are free. That moment you have transcended birth and death. The seeker is no more. You're not out there seeking for God, for light, for love, for the Christ mind. You have chosen to be one who has found. And you're extending the loving energy that gives you existence. And only Christ, only the Christ mind, only the Christ consciousness walks this earth. So that's where we left on Friday. The text goes on in the next section. It's titled, Feeling is the Doorway to Love and Freedom. If your commitment is indeed to look within and discover each and every obstacle you've ever created to the presence of love, why do you resist feeling those things? For well has it been said to you that on just the other side of that feeling is the very love you seek. Deny not the role of feeling in this dimension, for feeling is everything. You cannot even know the presence of the Creator unless you feel it. You cannot think about the presence of the Creator. You cannot insist on a belief about the presence of a Creator. That does not do it. That does not fill your cup. Feeling is what fills your cup. Feeling, unbridled, unblocked, unobstructed feeling, wide open feeling, allowed, accepted, surrendered to the feeling, that is the doorway to that love that sets you free. Therefore, when you say, quote, I don't want to feel this, close quote, rest assured that you are truly saying, yes, yes, I get it. The doorway to the kingdom of heaven is right here in front of me, but if you think I'm going to open it, you're crazy. It's not worth it anyway. What is worth it is protecting this little substitute that I've made. My sense of myself, my ego, my belief that I am the great and powerful Oz, I'm the great and powerful Dr. Hayes, I'm the great spiritual teacher, I'm the best dad ever, I am rich, I am famous, I am loving, I'm whatever it is I believe I am, I'm going to protect that rather than feel this upset. Allow, accept, surrender, embrace, trust, and therefore transcend whatever's down here at this feeling level and walk into the doorway to heaven, the kingdom of heaven. The text goes on to say, I have called this little substitute I've made, I've called it ego. I've called it the false self. What I once described to you as a gnat shouting at space, that's what I'm committed to, and I'm going to protect this thing. What What, are you crazy? Give up heaven to protect this useless little thing? Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. You'd better believe I'd be willing to make that sacrifice. What is heaven anyway? It's a bunch of love stuff. A bunch of people running around in bliss, some of them without bodies, hanging out in unlimitedness, fearlessness, and utter fulfillment. Who needs it? Oh, but this little gnat of mine, whew, I'm going to make this thing shine. How many times have you tried to make that little gnat of yours shine? For instance, quote, hey, everybody, notice. It's shining. Look what I did. Please notice how great I am. I'm making my little gnat shine. Listen to my whining and my complaining and my lamenting of the great sadness, all the troubles I've seen. Oh, how grand my little gnat is. I know how life should really be. All of this unfolding of energy and creation that goes any way I don't think it should, that shouldn't happen. My way is the right way. The text goes on to say, meanwhile, the love of God flows through a multitude of universes and creates forever even new universes. And the love of the Creator does not even notice that little gnat at all. No one is paying attention. Your friends around you do not want to pay attention, although sometimes you corner them and they have no choice. But those of us without bodies, do you really think we waste our precious eternity taking your attempt to make the great gnat shine? You think we take that seriously? Indeed, because we have great love for you, we give you the space and we honor your free will to be as little and as miserable as you wish. We will wait until you choose to come once again into the greatness in which you truly reside. We never withdraw our love from you. We simply look through your storyline because what we wish to see, to embrace, to experience, and love, what we wish to see is the Christ that dwells within you. What day and hour will you decide to love yourself as the Creator has first loved you? To truly, truly, once and for all, make the decision to live? For until you decide to live with and for, forever from the mind of Christ, life has not yet begun. Right away the mind reacts, oh my God, that's a bit of a blow, isn't it? Look at all the experiences I've had, Yeshua. How can you tell me I haven't lived? Why, there was that drama, and then there was that drama, and then there was that drama over there. Don't you remember 17 lifetimes ago when I did this and then I did that? I struggled through that one and I've struggled through this one. I've really lived. The text says, no, you haven't really lived. You have dreamed. Do you awaken in the morning and realize that you've had a whole night of dreams of receiving ribbons and trophies and whatever from the world? And then you say, that was very real. The trophies must be sitting on my kitchen table. While you dreamt, it felt real enough. And that is the quality I'm speaking to here. If you wish to take this as an affront, it's perfectly fine. It will not disturb my peace at all. Until you fully decide to come into life as the presence of the Christ mind, as the presence of capital L love, and to own each moment of your experience as wholly, completely self-created, for no other reason than that you have chosen it from the perfect and infinite freedom of your unlimited being. Until that happens, your life has not yet begun. You're dreaming. When you look upon all things without judgment through the eyes of forgiveness, when you decide to embody only the reality of love, no matter what anybody else is doing, that is when life begins. As of this date on your calendar, there have only been a handful of beings who have truly lived life upon this plane. A very small handful. There are many of us that would just absolutely be thrilled if you, I will let you in on a little secret, until you do not get to graduate. You will never leave this plane filled with conflict and suffering as it seems to be until you have lived the experiences of walking this earth wholly, completely as the thought of love in form with no other allegiances but to love, capital L love. Until then, you will never leave this plane. You will never take up your cross and follow me, as the saying goes. You will spin around again and again and again only to be confronted with the same need to decide completely, wholly for love. You've got to wake up to your true nature. You've got to understand that your intellectual mind cannot reason this out for you. You have to wake up and understand that you're dreaming and you're perceiving a distorted perception, a distorted picture of life every time there's a negative emotion active in your mind, a negative thought or a negative emotion. Until you do that, you're sleepwalking. And you're going to walk out to the kitchen table and expect to find the trophies and ribbons there, but it was a dream. The text goes on at the top of page 80. You will finally look heavenward and say, Father, let's get on with it. Enough time has been wasted. It's gone. It's fine. It doesn't matter. Now, in this moment, I am committed to love, capital L love. I'm committed to the flow of life. I'm committed to all that is. I'm committed to allowance, surrender, acceptance, trust, that process of forgiveness that removes every false perception. As soon as I recognize the negative emotional state, I'm committed to that. Bring on whatever I must experience so that it brings up from the depth of me, those places where I've hidden it within me, every single obstacle that I must dissolve so that I can be and let the light of the grace of perfect love flow through me. So I can be that conduit, so I can be that open state of channeling this flow of creative energy. The text goes on, and I will do whatever I can from my side of the fence. This is Yeshua speaking, to open up those places, to feel those places, to embrace those places, to love those places, to claim those places as wholly self-created. I will let my parents off the hook. I will let my siblings off the hook. I will let my great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather off the hook. I will let Adam and Eve off the hook. I will let the government off the hook, and I will love myself enough to heal my separation from God. Now, if Rice were reading this, he would be bristling and rebelling and saying, that's not what forgiveness is. And this book understands that. This book understands that when I'm in the process of blaming someone else, I'm not accepting responsibility for what I'm creating. So rather than spend my time blaming everybody else, I'm going to turn inside and dismantle the false perceptions I've created. I will do whatever I can from my side of the equation. And I said that this is Yeshua speaking, but this is suggested that this is what I would say. This is what each of us would say if we were choosing to come back to that previous paragraph, finally look heavenward and say, Creator, let's get on with it. I've been wasting enough time blaming everyone and everything around me for my upset, and it doesn't matter that I've wasted that time because right now, in this present moment, I'm committed to the flow of energy that we call life and love. I'm ready to experience whatever I need to experience from the depth of my soul, my life experience, my traumas, my beliefs. I'm ready to experience that from wherever I've hidden it in my mind. I think it's back in the intro to this book with this promise. It says, you need to look upon the places in your mind where fear has made a home. Every one of them. There's a place in Course in Miracles where it says, you may wonder why you need to look upon your deepest hatreds. Right? I just want love. I just want light. But if I'm carrying around a deep belief that I'm not worthy or that somebody else is causing my upset, if I won't go to that place where that error in thought originated and see the truth of it and release my attachment to it, release my love for it, my identification with it, if I won't release it, it doesn't go anywhere. I have the ability to hold on. I have this free will. I have this process of focusing my mind energy, which creates my experience of life. So it's recommended that I say, quote, I will do whatever I can from my side of the fence to open up those places, to feel those places, to embrace those places, to love those places, and claim all of those places where I blame somebody else as completely self-created. I will stop blaming parents, siblings, great-great-great-great-grandfathers. I will stop blaming Adam and Eve. I will stop blaming the government. And I will embrace the true nature of love that I am, which is the only way to heal my fault from the Creator. I will be humble enough to recognize that if I am having an experience that indeed creation itself has brought me those experiences. The text reads, quote, I will be humble enough to recognize that if I'm having an experience because I know I've made the commitment to healing, then you have indeed, precious Creator, brought me all good things. For this moment of experience can be seen through eyes that recognize it is not an obstacle. It is but a stepping stone to the perfect peace that I seek. Quote, my life is no longer mine. For I know not how to correct that one fundamental error. But I can surrender into feeling each moment fully while choosing love anyway. And love, capital L love, will dissolve the pain that I've carried. All because I insisted on trying to separate myself from the source of my being. This little gnat of mine is being put to rest. For the only thing that can shine is the Christ mind, is the one mind, is the divine mind. For Christ, the sons and daughters of the offspring of the Creator, the offspring of creation, this entity that you have, this ability to be aware, this Christ mind connection, is the only creation of the Creator. All the rest and the experience of it is attributed to you. Even time and space is created by you. Your Creator's only creation is you, the truth of you, consciousness expressing in form. For you are love, and the Creator creates only that which is like unto itself. And the Creator, the creation, is only love. Many of you believe you're on a spiritual path. You will know if that is true by your willingness to feel and experience wholly, completely, exactly what is in front of you moment to moment. So if you have a conflict with another and you sit in your chair and you decide to pray or meditate in order to change the feeling state within yourself and you arise later and say, well, there, I'm feeling much better now. But the issue has not been solved with another. Nothing has changed. Go, therefore, to the other. Open your heart. Share and resolve. If you have offended another, ask them for their forgiveness. If you have judged another, admit it. Ask them for forgiveness. It is only in such a way that you can truly heal the place of conflict within yourself. Beloved friends, the essence of this lesson is quite simple. Where are you now? Are you willing to allow yourself to see everything around you and within you as the doorway to the kingdom of heaven, waiting for you to acknowledge its presence and then to open it? Are you willing to be right where you are, wholly, completely right where you are? And the mind says, well, of course, I'm on a spiritual path. Rest assured, if you look well into your feelings and find any trace of resistance, you've not yet made the necessary commitment that gives you the power to open that door. So let's go back to this paragraph. When I read these last two paragraphs on the bottom of page 80 in this work, it threw me for a loop the first time I read it. I went back and read it again and again and again. But because I had done so much reading and rereading of the first five lessons and the first part of lesson six, I understood this is just what Michael Rice would call, you know, poor regulatory speech. It's the conditioning of the culture that might have been flowing through Mark David Hammer, J.M., John Mark Hammer, not Mark David, John Mark Hammer, the person who's now known as J.M., J-A-Y-E-M. He had a life. He had his own, you know, experiences in Vietnam. He had a whole history with his family. And his personality and his language and his family experiences, cultural experiences, colored some of these messages as they were coming through him. But if you read carefully, even in the third lesson about forgiveness, the power of forgiveness, it says, look, if you do this work and you imagine the time when you were 4 years old and you pushed that kid down just to watch them cry, and you go and you do the work of forgiveness, which is owning the upset, owning and dismantling the false perception that you've created about yourself and the other. Well, it doesn't matter that it's, you know, you're in your 50s and this happened when you were 4 years old, because that person doesn't need to be in front of you for you to undo the false perceptions, the negative emotions, the traumatic energies within yourself, because they're there and they're active right now in this moment. And it goes on to say, that person, even if they were right in front of you, and you went to make an apology and tried to, you know, help them understand that you see that they didn't do anything bad to you, they would still have their own choice to make about whether or not to accept this change of energy that you're sending them, this pardoning, this desire for connection, this extension of the loving energy. They could refuse it. They have their own choice to make. They can hold a grudge. They can pour mind energy into vengeance or grief or sadness or their own, you know, traumatic energy from that last experience from four or 40 years ago. So don't get too sidetracked by these last two paragraphs on page 80. What I take from this is simply what so many of these deep spiritual traditions say. I can't make deep changes within myself if I never get off the meditation cushion. I can't stay locked away in my apartment and breathe and meditate and visualize light and get rid of the garbage in me. I have to be in the moment, in life, letting the flow of life hit me and have these feelings and just own 100% ownership that I'm the one creating my reaction, my emotions, my experience of this flow of life. And as I do that, if it's happening in my life in interaction with somebody else, and I just get all tight and quiet and shut down and leave, and I don't approach them, and I don't offer to communicate, and I don't offer to make amends, and I don't offer to connect, I don't get rid of the wounded places in me that gave rise to that interaction, or at least my half of the equation of that interaction in the first place. These last two paragraphs, rather than being, you know, this isn't the same as Dr. Michael Reisel's work. Dr. Michael Reisel will say over and over again, yeah, you got to reach out in connection with people. You've got to own and interact and do the responsibility communication and understand that's a tool that he has. It's available on the website at whyagain.org. I'm going to try to learn I'm going to work at communicating what I experienced, what I made it mean, and that I understand that I'm the one generating all of my emotions and responses to this interaction that I had with another. And I'm going to make every attempt to communicate that actively with another person to create that space, whereas the Course in Miracles says there's no place holier on this planet than the place where an ancient hatred becomes a present love. So with all of the conflict that I might experience with my family and my friends and the person down the street, and I'm done with that. I'm cutting that person out of my life. Okay, I can do that. But if I do, I slumber in my suffering. If I make attempts to communicate fairly and clearly that I understand I'm the one creating my emotions and I'm willing to connect, and they choose not to connect with me, that's okay. I don't want to be in a position where I'm trying to force somebody to do something they don't want to do, whether it's pardon me or do their own forgiveness work or understand, you know, my side of the equation. Maybe they don't want to do that. What these last two paragraphs on the bottom of page 80 are saying is, if I don't make the attempt in active interaction with the other person to communicate and resolve that, I hide things from myself. So being willing, putting myself out there, living life fully in the moment, that's the only way. For me to clear up what I need to clear up, to have direct conscious awareness of this Christ mind, to understand that, quote, my life is no longer mine because I don't know how to correct this fundamental error that I've created, this perception of being separate from God and light and love and life itself. However, I can learn to catch my resistance, and as soon as I realize I'm resisting, drop the resistance and move into allowance and surrender. And I can allow myself to feel fully in each moment while choosing for love, choosing to teach only love in each moment, choosing to remember the source of my experience. My existence is love. I can trust that that energy of life and love will dissolve the pain that I've carried because I insisted on trying to create an experience of being separate from the Creator. Page 81, this last segment of the lesson 6 is titled, Only Through Feeling Do You Awaken. The text reads, feeling is the message of this lesson, for it is only through feeling that you truly awaken. concepts and ideas can begin to direct the mind to believe that there is something out there that is attractive, that might be better than what you've been doing before. But concepts and ideas do not in themselves open the door. Concepts and ideas are symbols, and that is all. A symbol cannot quench your thirst. It is only at the level of genuine feeling that you can once again know the presence of creation and that creative energy that dwells within you, around you, and through you. Even now, in this moment, your ability to be awake and aware and have the experience of life is because creative energy is flowing through you. Feel what you have created as a substitute for truth. Own it, look upon it, and then let it go. Learn that regardless of what choice you may have made in the past, once you have embraced it, once you have felt it, you remain perfectly innocent and imbued with the power to choose again, to feel, to learn once again to feel the glorious warmth that permeates the kingdom of heaven. So, only through feeling do you awaken. And my mind wants to say, this is why teachers like Dr. Michael Rice talk so much about how the drugs that we have, whether it's sugar or caffeine or alcohol or the cannabis, the coke, the heroin, the drugs that we have, or the behaviors that we engage in compulsively as a way to avoid feeling, being aware of, feeling fully, or numbing out from a pain, or avoiding being connected to and acting from our highest guidance. Any of those drugs take us out of, off of the path, inhibit our progress. Just like everybody else, I'm a person who's raised in this culture. I'm a person whose family, I wasn't raised with, you know, raging alcoholics, but I was raised in a family where alcohol was part of most big parties and gatherings and celebrations. And I was lucky enough to be raised in a family where the vast majority of people who were the adults in my family celebrated in moderation. I have just the slightest handful of times that I remember anybody at a family party that my parents held who was drunk. So my parents kept friends that did not drink, you know, to excess, at least around my parents. My parents didn't drink. My mother didn't drink at all. My dad drank in moderation. I was blessed. But it was still the process of numbing out. And if you're really, really wanting to be in life, this work is saying, I have to feel all of the feelings. If somebody comes to me and says, oh, you know, Tim, we found a pancreatic cancer in your latest test. And so you either have to drink all these poisons or have us cut it out and put you on life support, or you're going to die fairly quickly. Pancreatic cancer tends to take people out very quickly these days, or it used to anyway. And if I run to the bottle, if I run to the pill, if I run to the distraction of sex or spending spree, I won't be feeling. I won't be open to the flow of life. And boy, do I get it. I understand from personal experience the draw to numb myself out from the pain of a divorce I didn't want and, you know, the relatively early death of my father and, you know, all these things that have happened in the past 15 or 20 years that I would not have chosen any of them. I get the draw to numb out and not feel. I also understand how different it is to go through it resisting the urge to numb out, to breathe, to soften, to allow, to embrace, to trust, and surrender to the flow of life and all of these emotions that I generate around it. I understand how different it is to be going through these kinds of life events that not only would I not ever choose for myself, I wouldn't wish them on my most hated enemy. But to go through it with the use of these tools rather than the use of drugs. So only through feeling do you awaken. And we're invited here to feel what we've created as a substitute for the truth, to own it, to look upon it, and let it go. Because only with allowance and surrender do we get to feel the glorious warmth that permeates the kingdom of heaven. Feeling is the way we get a connection with creation. The last few paragraphs read, "Nothing you do with time can match the importance of what we have shared in this lesson. Nothing that you do in time, nothing you do in the field of time holds a candle to the incredible gift that is waiting for you when, if it's not in time, now. In this present moment, whenever you're hearing it, whenever you wake up." It says, "Therefore, use time constructively by deciding to love, to have affection for, to seek only the capital L love that may teach you of itself, the power of creation, the extension of the one mind of creation. Seek it. Invite it. Stay open to feeling what it brings in you. Indeed, beloved and holy friends, when you have done this, you will find yourself translated into a form that could never possibly be contained by the space and volume of a physical body. You will look upon this entire dimension as a mere temporary learning device. You will set it aside as a child sets aside a toy that's been outgrown. But you will do it with deep appreciation and love for the toy that you've played with for so long. You will carry with you a deep sense of gratitude for everything this physical dimension has brought to you. There will not be a molecule of beingness within you that will feel any resentment, any longing, any anger, or any remorse for anything. All of your experience will have become completely acceptable to you. For it was by such experience that you were finally driven to want only the truth, capital T truth. From this day forward, you will never again be able to truly convince yourself that all of your attempts to stay distracted or conform to the world are really accomplishing a thing. You will find that your mind begins to penetrate the unconscious habits you have created in an attempt to hide from what yet must be felt. You will know perfectly well when you are simply deluding yourself. You'll start to smile and say, yes, there I go again. Well, I might as well set that aside, and I'll just plant my feet firmly on the ground, and indeed, I will live with passion from the truth of the kingdom of heaven. In the way of the heart, we will speak ever more directly and even more forcefully to you. For the time comes quickly when this planet will not be willing to tolerate untidy house guests that are not willing to vibrate at the frequency of being toward which the planet herself is preparing to move. Therefore, be not caught by coming home one day and discovering that the landlord has changed the locks and you have no place to rest your head. Rather, become the living embodiment of this energy of creation that some call love, and journey with your Holy Mother into an entirely new dimension of being. And don't forget to sing, laugh, dance, and play along the way. Be you therefore at peace, beloved friends. Amen. So that takes us to the end of our show, and I believe that Jeannie Rice made it, so I can remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice, and have a wonderful show.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio, and today is Monday, March the 28th, 2022, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and your questions, because that makes this your show. While we're waiting on Michael to dial in, I'll just direct you to our website, which is www.whyagain.org. And if you're new to the work, you can click on the Start Here button in the upper left corner, or you can scroll down and hit the bullseye. They both go to the same place. And that's where you'll find first the Factors of Perception poster, how we create our perception. And then you scroll on down, and there are several different little blocks that you can click, and it opens up, and you'll find Chapter 24 of Michael's book, where he walks the character, Richard, through doing a worksheet. You'll also find a PowerPoint presentation of the Aramaic Forgiveness, and then the several mini versions of the wake-up sheet. And then on down, you'll see special instructions for MP3s of radio shows where we've walked people through doing the worksheet. If you go to that now, you'll also find, Michael had done an hour workshop presentation of Why Is This Happening to Me Again. And just underneath that, you'll find the link where we did the Hear My Voice Global Book Club last week. And Michael walked through the worksheet that is actually in the book, because most of the people were going through by the book. And there's a link there and a passcode. You can click on it, and you can watch the MP4 video of it. And then, sorry about that. I was just clicking through. I got a flip-up message when Dr. Tim hung up. Anyway, we're going to also be with that group this coming Thursday, the 31st, and it's more of a question and answer and discussion about the Aramaic Forgiveness. And we have agreed to be with the book club twice a month. I'm not absolutely sure if it's the last two Thursdays of the month. We'll have to find out for sure on that, but we have agreed to be with the club twice a month. And they are from everywhere. And when it says it's a global book club, I mean, it is. They are from just about every country. I think there were 75 people on the call last Thursday. And so, like I said, that link is out there on the website under Special MP3 Shows, and you can watch the presentation that Michael did. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Delighted that you're here with us and honored to be able to move the conversation forward to the next level of understanding these amazing, amazing principles. And I was talking to someone recently that triggered a desire to cover a particular topic on the show, so I want to open that one up. And as I was speaking to someone who was, someone who's been involved in doing their work for many years and is a pretty high-level therapist. And I had responded to a post that they had put up, and they were talking about the idea of something making you feel. How did that, basically the question was, how did that make you feel? And there's a whole complex of information that goes into creating this thing called perception in the mind, a construct that shows us not necessarily what's true about what's happening in the world, but what's true about what we believe is happening in the world. And because those two things can be very literally diametrically opposed, depending on the language that we use, I just want to bring forward once again a reminder of the power of words. If you listen to Yeshua 2,000 years ago, he says the power of life and death is in your words. You might remember your mother saying something to you like, as mine did, choose your words carefully. One day you may need to eat them. And there was wisdom in that. And so I want to kind of start out with a basic idea and then develop it from there, just to kind of cover that whole topic. You might want to do a search on YouTube, and there's a TED Talk done by a man named Anil, A-N-I-L-S-E-T-H. Anil Seth is a neuroscientist at, if I remember correctly, University of Sussex in England. And what Neil offers to us is the understanding that perception, the world we see, the construct of our mind is nothing more than a construct. It is the mind's best guess based on what's resonated within it, its best guess about what is actually happening outside of it. But they're two different things. Now, the best we can hope from perception is that the information that's used to develop it is true and accurate, and therefore our perception gives us something true about what's happening in the world. But the offering here is, if perception is coming from the mind, that even if everything it tells us about the world of actuality is true, it's still just a reality in our minds. So reality is a construct in the mind. Actuality is what actually happened. If our reality is 100% accurate, it's still just a reality in the mind. It is not what actually happened in the world. And my offering is that you don't have actual life until you are actually interacting with what's actually going on in the world. And I know that's a lot of actualies. But while we're in perception, even if it is accurate, it's not the experience. We're not directly experiencing the energy of what's happening in the actual world. And we have faculties to do that. It's just not the mind that gives that to us. So recognizing that reality is a construct, an important piece of understanding how those constructs are made comes from understanding the power of language in structuring our perception, the world we see. We've talked many times about the Harvard research in the realm of psychology that says that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells are firing, there are 10,000 measurable units of electrical activity happening in the brain, the max amount of data that goes into constructing your perception is 9 bits. Very, very tiny fragment of what's moving in your mind, and certainly a much tinier fragment of what's moving in the actuality. The time frame for those numbers of 10,000 bits being measured, 10,000 units of electrical activity being measured, and 9 bits of that, 9 fragments of that being what structures our reality, is about a 25th of a second. And it's been estimated, and I don't know that anyone's ever been able to or could ever actually tell us what the truth of it is, but it's been estimated that in that same time frame, there may be as much as 20 trillion bits of data happening in the actuality, in the actual world that's in front of you. So let's just accept that number. It might be a half of that. It might be 20 times that. I don't know. I don't know that we have a way of measuring it with our, you know, we're kind of like an ant trying to measure the height of that radio tower over there. How do we do that? But let's just go with 20 trillion bits. The mind is kind of like a reducer valve, reduces it down to 10,000 bits. And then the next level of reduction is to our perceptual construct is 9 bits. The key becomes what determines which 9 bits of information your mind selects out of the perhaps 20 trillion or the 10,000. What information does your mind select to form that 9-bit construct in your mind? And what directs that process? Well, number one, the driver, the overall driver for that process is goals. And let's talk about this in familiar terms of where there is upset. So you'll notice that unless you're a generally miserable person, you're pretty happy with everybody who's doing everything that you want them to do. Everybody that is in a reasonable way fulfilling all the goals you have for them. And you'll notice that you're only pointing upset at them when they're not fulfilling a goal that you have for them. And our goals, by and large, are formulated out of words. So words instruct the mind what data it is allowed to use to generate its construct, your perception. Words either allow or inhibit certain information from being used. So once you recognize that the only thing that can cause you to feel is an energy that's moving inside of you, you know, aside from cancel the thought, a punch in the nose, feelings are internal. They come from within. Emotions are internal. They come from within. And the words we use to tell our minds how to structure our understanding of what we're feeling are really important, because those words can either inhibit or will allow or will cause the mind to hallucinate information about what's happening and give us either a relatively accurate or a totally false perception. Let's take the person who's in a deep state of somnambulism, a deep hypnotic state. And we've all seen it. This person's standing on the stage. And standing on the stage, words are fed into this person's mind. And hypnosis is nothing but the uncritical acceptance of an idea. An idea fed with words into the mind of the person standing on the stage, the person is hypnotized. And we say to that person, you are now on the bow of a ship. And literally, this person looks down at the stage that a moment before was just a stage. But now that they've uncritically accepted the idea that they're on the bow of a ship, when they look down at the stage, the brain, because the words interrupt the natural flow of information. You know, there's a stage, light energy bounces off of the stage, hits my eye, feeds information to my brain perceives I'm standing on a stage. But if the hypnotist intervenes and says you're standing on the bow of a ship, then literally what the mind does is it produces the hallucination of living on the bow or standing on the bow of a ship. Literally, this person looks at the stage and does not see a stage, but they see the bow of a ship. So that's an hallucinated reality. And if you've ever seen, you know, up close somebody in hypnosis, it's very, very real to them, even though it never happened and it isn't there. It can be very disturbing and upsetting if the hypnotist tells them that's what's going on, or it can be very wonderful and pleasing. If you listen to the ancients, when they said transcend, they weren't saying float off in space somewhere. They were saying put an end to the state of trance, get out of hypnosis. Most people live most of their lives in a state of hypnosis, in a lie. And their perception shows them that the lie is true. Now, there's nothing true about standing on the bow of a ship for the person who's on stage being told by a hypnotist you're standing on the bow of a ship, but that doesn't change the fact that their construct, the mind's construct, shows them standing on the bow of a ship. If I feed incorrect words to my mind, my mind will has this ability to turn my words into pictures. You're on the bow of a ship, and sure enough, the mind turns that into pictures. Now, if I speak accurately about, let's say, a painful emotion that I have, then my accurate speech is going to be, well, you know, this event happened in the world, and what that resonated in me was this particular quality of pain. And when I speak those words accurately to my mind, I've given my mind permission to show me that this pain is something that comes from inside of me and belongs to me. But if I speak inaccurate words, and my words are a desire to deny and not own what's happening in me, and I say, you made me really suffer by the hurt you inflicted on me when you did whatever it was that you did. My mind will then generate for me a construct. And remember, when you're looking at 10,000 brain cells firing and only 9 bits of data, you're looking at evidence. And words are the primary thing that give the mind permission to show certain evidence. So when I say to my mind, you really hurt me when you did that, I've said to my mind, structure for me a construct where I get to see that Bill over there is the cause of my hurt. And my mind will literally build me a construct, a 9-bit picture, where I see Bill as the cause of my hurt, and I really will see it and experience it that way. That's the power of words in the evidential mind. And the reason I'm talking about this is, and, you know, as I say, I was interacting with someone who's been involved in this work for some time and is a fairly high-level therapist, but still talking about how did that make you feel. My offering is that we need to give up the fallacy that anything outside of us can cause us to feel anything. Again, aside from a punch in the nose. You get a punch in the nose, you're going to have some, you know, experiences in there. But, you know, we talk to somebody on the phone who's on the other side of the world and we rage at them for causing all this pain in us. It's like, how could somebody on the other side of the world speaking into a little piece of plastic and metal with a glass face on it cause air molecules to move because of the way they vibrate their voice box, and those air molecules cause a little plastic thing called a microphone to vibrate back and forth, and that vibration of the microphone is converted into an electrical frequency that then is inserted into a signal that travels from the other side of the world through the air, through electronic waves, through technology. And there's an antenna just down the road. That frequency is broadcast by that antenna. And I have another little with a glass face on it and a little plastic cone in it called a speaker. And that electrical frequency that came out of that person's mouth on the other side of the world resonates and fires with a similar frequency here in my phone, and I think I hear that person saying words, and I say, your words really upset me. I mean, how silly is it that someone vibrating their voice box on the other side of the world, because a little piece of plastic in this thing I call a telephone vibrates, that they caused me to be upset? I mean, it's just pure silliness. So my offering is that giving up that fallacy that anything can cause us to feel anything, and recognize that all that the outside world can show us is what's already within us. So if somebody on the other side of the world vibrated their voice box, telephone broadcast a signal, signals decoded by my phone and comes back to me, I need to recognize that my emotions are a part of perception. And that my emotions are a reflection of something that's going on inside of me. It's an internally generated construct of my mind. And if I don't like its effect on me when it moves in me, by telling you that you're the reason I'm experiencing this, I leave a whole step out of what's happening in my mind and in my structure where this energy is stored that I'm feeling the effects of. If you can do me the favor of showing me some sort of emotional pain that I have in me and I can actually own it, then you've given me the opportunity to recognize I've got something stored in me that is causing pain, which means, in effect, it doesn't belong in me. And so now I have the opportunity to heal that. I have the opportunity to remove that. I have the opportunity to forgive that energetic pattern in me, remembering that forgiveness has nothing to do with me letting you off the hook for what's happening inside of me, but that forgiveness is a piece of technology with which you go inside yourself and you collapse the world of false perception. And you get to access directly the underlying energy that's stored in you that's causing you to feel. Now, that's a huge blessing, unless you live in denial. And denial leads to deepening disease. And I'm speaking of the specific definition of denial that we've developed in this work, which is whenever I think or speak as though something outside of me is the cause of something moving inside of me, then I'm in denial. You know, in order to play the blame game and believe that my lie, that something or someone outside is a cause for what's happening inside of me, I've got to hide the real cause of it from me. I've got to hide the energy that's moving in me and hallucinate a construct that paints for me a picture of a world that shows me that you're the problem, that you're the reason I'm feeling this, rather than the reason I'm feeling this is because it's inside of me. Now, the problem with that whole game of denial, thinking or speaking as though something outside is the cause of what's moving inside, means that each time I enter into denial, I successfully hide the cause of what's really going on. And hiding that is called dissociation. If I dissociate from the cause of something in me, I now no longer have access to that which is moving in me or the cause of that which is moving in me, and I cannot remove it. I cannot apply forgiveness to it because my mind won't show me that it's mine, and therefore I cannot access it directly. I'll always remain in that dissociated state. So I've created now, through denial, through this pretense, through this cultural idea that you're the cause of what's moving in me, I've created an unnatural internal condition. I've created an unconscious mind. And my offering is that we are not designed as human beings to have an unconscious mind. How far are we away from our natural state? Well, if you talk to the psychologist today, they'll tell you that perhaps as much as 90 or 95 or maybe even 98% of what's moving in your mind is unconscious. We're not, so how far are we away from our natural condition? Well, if 98% of what's going on in our minds is unconscious, we're a long way from condition where we're not designed to have anything unconscious in us. We should be able to access and touch into anything that's moving in us at any time. But if we push down that energy through denial, you made me mad, you made me sad, you hurt me, you upset me, you disturbed me. When I do that, I'm pushing down and refusing to access what's true in me. Which means I'm going to increase the discomfort wherever that energy is stored in tissue. And because relative to any particular part of my tissue, if it's causing pain, it's causing pain because it's of a disintegrative nature. It's not designed to be there. So when I recognize that this pain is signaling me that there's something inside of me that doesn't belong in me, then I have the opportunity to access, if I'm willing to move out of that unconscious state, and remove what never belonged. The process of removing, of accessing and removing what never belonged in you is called forgiveness. Notice the Greeks turned around and showed us or gave us a totally and completely backward definition of forgiveness, one that's consistent with living in a world of denial. You know, notice how much the world time spends in you made me. I'm only upset because of you. It's what you did that disturbed me. So when I refuse to own what's going on in me, what do I have to do? I have to push on it. I have to push it down and push it out of sight. But each time I push it out of sight, I add energy to that pattern. What it does is it assures that it's going to repeat in my life. It's going to give me that why is this happening to me again experience. If you haven't read the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again Yet? Unfortunately, we can't sell you one because it's out of print. However, you can go to Amazon or eBay, and there are always lots of used copies there. Fortunately, a quarter of a century ago, we spread enough copies of that book around the country that there's still lots of them hanging around in Amazon, eBay, and other used bookstores. Or you're welcome to go to our website, whyagain.org, whyagain.org. And if you go there and you click on the book cover, you can go in and download the book in any one of, I don't know, 7 or 8 or 9 languages. And Jeannie was telling me that we just had someone the other day that's volunteering to translate the book into Polish. So we'll have, hopefully before too long, another language. So the book is there, and it details this why is this happening to me again game. You know, we're just doing a brief picture of it here. But ultimately, what forgiveness does, it allows me to collapse the world of false perception that's based on the lies I tell myself. Lies like, you made me mad, you made me sad, you hurt me, you upset me, it's your problem. You know, if they're the one with the pain, why am I the one with the pain? Something about that doesn't make sense. Good question to ask yourself. If they're the one with the problem, why am I the one with the pain? If you have pain and you think it's somebody else's problem, you've really got a problem. And it's your opportunity to learn to access that energy in yourself and remove its influence from your life. So if I never deal with, if I never remove that energy, then over and over again, someone is going to show up that's going to resonate that in me. Well, why would somebody show up to resonate that in me, Michael? Because that's what governs the world, the law of resonance. It's a law of energy exchange. In its simplest form, if I take a middle C tuning fork and I put it in front of a second middle C tuning fork, I hit that first one on the desk and get it vibrating really hard. I put it in front of the second middle C tuning fork. The second middle C tuning fork starts to move. That's what resonance does. It creates motion. And in the human realm, resonance creates motion towards. Someone's going to show up that matches whatever you hold within you. And the more you try to push it down, the more you put energy into it. You know, I like to use an example of, let's imagine that I've got a 3-foot diameter spring that stands 3 feet high. And here it is on the floor. Can that spring do anything just sitting there on the floor? Can it create motion? Can it go anywhere? No, absolutely not. But what happens if I go over and I push on that spring and lock it down? Now there is potential energy stored in that spring. And what if I push on it again and again and again and again and again, and I spend my whole life saying things like, you made me mad, you made me sad. That language means that you're pushing down that spring in yourself every time you say that or think that. What happens if after decades of that, I take the lock off of that spring and all that potential energy becomes kinetic and bang, it flies off into space? One of the fortunate things I got to do back about 40 years ago, it was over a period of several years, I was invited to speak, to do keynote addresses at a conference called Global Sciences. And one year, a gentleman named Marcel Vogel, absolute sweetheart of a man, genius, was speaking at the conference as well. And what Marcel did, Marcel was a 23-year senior scientist from IBM, absolute genius. He's a guy that at the age of 11 invented chemical light. You know, if you go to a football game or what have you, you buy a light stick, and it's a plastic tube, and in it there's some glass rods or what have you. Bend it, and you break the glass rods inside, and the two chemicals mix, and all of a sudden it lights up. Marcel invented that at the age of 11, and because his family didn't have the money, he patented it at the age of 11 personally. The only reason that you are able to utilize the computer that you use or the phone that you use is Marcel invented the magnetic coating that allows your hard drive to operate. That's the kind of mind Marcel had. So Marcel, this particular year, brought a thing with him to the conference called a Delaware camera and explained how he had used this camera to take a picture of the high energy waves that leave the mind when we think a thought. Now, the camera's a little different than your standard camera that, you know, when you click the button, it opens the aperture and light energy comes in and is registered on the photographic plate. Between the lens and the photographic plate, aside from the shutter, there's a tuning mechanism so that you can tune the camera so that only certain energies are picked up when the lens is opened. And they're the energies that reflect onto the photographic plate. If you tune it properly, for instance, and I've seen the pictures, they take a picture of an oak tree, or pardon me, they take a picture of an acorn, and what shows up on the photographic plate is an oak tree. Now, on first thought, most people go, oh, come on, Michael, now isn't that just getting a little ridiculous? It's like, well, if you understand the world and physics and how it works, you know, I'm in a room right now. I'm not listening to one radio station. I don't have the TV turned on. But, you know, invisible to me right now, there are probably 1,000 different television stations and, who knows, 10,000 different radio stations that are in this room with me right now. All I need is the decoding mechanism, the tuner, to attune to it, and I can be listening to that station. It's here. Now my senses say, no, that's ridiculous. I go over and I take a knife and I cut the acorn up into 1,000 pieces and I say, that's ridiculous, oak tree in here. But think about it logically. If you've ever planted an acorn, or if you've planted acorns repeatedly over the years, what you've noticed is that every time you plant an acorn, you get an oak tree. You don't get corn. You don't get a new Mercedes. You don't get a Volkswagen or an apple tree. You get an oak tree. Now, obviously, in the same way that these radio stations and these television stations are in the room with you and I right now, in the oak tree, or pardon me, in the acorn, there has to be the instruction set, the vibratory image, the picture of the oak tree. Because every time you put that puppy in the ground and you give it water and you give it light, it turns into an oak tree. Obviously, the instruction set is there if you know how to read it. So now here's Marcel, and he tunes the camera properly, and he can take a picture of the high energy waves that leave the mind when we think a thought. Now, if there's something in my life that I say, boy, I never want that to happen again. You know, like if I say to you, don't think about the color of your car, what moves in your mind? Through resonance, what moves in your mind is something about the color of your car. If I say, I don't want that to happen to me again, what energetic pattern is moving in me except that? And if these high energy waves are literally moving out from me, is that the creative wave? Is that what motivates somebody to be moving toward me, resonating into my space, and then doing a behavior that maybe they've sworn they would never do again? You know, how many have ever gone into somebody's space totally committed to being loving, caring, nurturing, and all of a sudden found yourself functioning like a mad banshee? It's like, what happened? Why did I go into that fit of rage with them? I was going in there to be gentle and nurturing and supportive. Well, here's what happened. There was a high energy wave emanating from their minds about being abused, and there's a high energy wave in your mind that matched their abuse. And that resonance set up, moved the energy in you of abuse, and perhaps against your own will and choice, took over as you spewed that abuse on that other person. Why did you spew that particular form of abuse? Because it was in you. Why did you spew it on that person? Because they were in resonance with it, and that interchange of energy resonated, activated that in you. And most people live their whole lives never knowing that their relationships are based on matching bags of garbage that people come together to spew. Because when that energy moves in us, if we wake up, if we understand the point of this whole presentation I'm doing today, that what's moving inside of you is a reflection of what's moving inside of you, that what you're feeling is a reflection of that which is in you, then by becoming aware that it's in you and acquiring the skill and the tool of forgiveness, removal, you get to remove that disintegrative energy from your structure. And I'd offer that's the purpose of the world. The purpose of the world is to kick you right square in the limitation, to continuously hone in on, through resonance, whatever it is that's killing you and give you the opportunity to forgive it. Because life abhors us being diseased. So when I wake up to what I've shut down in me, what I've denied and dissociated from, I can now choose to move inside myself and find what I've hidden and remove that energy. Strengthen what I've hidden from myself through denial and resistance. The energy field of what I do not ever want to have happen again in my life, by holding that lie, by believing that somebody else causes that in me, then the likelihood of me resonating it into my space increases exponentially. Whenever there's something I refuse to be responsible for that I live in denial and dissociation with, I've set myself up for a repeated occurrence. Basically, the why is this happening to me again experience. Forgiveness is about accessing and removing denied and dissociated content. And that's what we're here to support people in understanding and acquiring the technology. Now, I'm going to offer you, this technology has been around for 2,000 years. How quickly did the technology of forgiveness disappear from the earth? Well, there was this guy named Yeshua, and he brought the technology forward. And then there's another guy named Paul who came along a few decades later, never met Yeshua. And this guy Paul is supposed to be a primo teacher of Yeshua's work. You know, he traveled all over, and he was like rocking. If you listen to Yeshua, the purpose and the result produced by the actual work that he gave people was they would live as love, and they would create a world of peace and health and vitality. Paul says, in a moment of his, I suspect, extreme frustration, why is it the things I would do, I cannot do? And the things I hate are what I do. And this is just a couple of decades after Yeshua put it out there and handed it to people. And Paul did not have a clue how to clean up his own energy field. And so he found himself driven by those internal unconscious dynamics I would offer to do things that he thought were vile and to be incapable of doing things that he thought were wonderful and that he wanted to be able to do. If it left and disappeared that quickly, and it's been gone for almost 2,000 years, how long do you suppose you're going to have to hang out with it in order to understand it and bring it back? Well, if you've got the background and history in the brain cells, you might be able to do it more quickly than I did. I don't know. Except in 2,000 years, everywhere I've looked, I've never seen anybody who understood the technology. Pardon me. Anybody who's ever formulated it correctly and said, here's precisely how, on a consistent, persistent basis, you can go into your own unconscious mind, access the content that is there that has you doing things you hate, as Paul did, and disables you in doing things that you want to do. Here's the technology. Well, I'll offer that from the time I was introduced to it, I hung out with it full time. And I'm talking about full time. I'm talking about 60, 70, 80, 90 hours a week full time. And it took me 35 years to understand what it means and how it's done. And I don't know. You could go off on your own. Maybe you'll figure it out in a couple of weeks. All you'll need to do is have brain cells about psychology, psychiatry, brain cells about theology, brain cells about physics, brain cells about physiology, brain cells about neurolinguistics, brain cells about how the brain functions, how the mind functions. That's all you'll have to have is those brain cells, and you'll be able to go, oh, here's what he was teaching 2,000 years ago. But you know, I've looked everywhere, and I haven't found one person in 2,000 years that knew how that was done. If you're not using the forgiveness process, we invite you to go to our website. You can do it live. There's a worksheet, step-by-step process. You can do it live right there on the website. You can print the worksheet off so that you can do it yourself at home. Or if you have a smartphone, into your app store, Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. Type in Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and you'll be looking at the only forgiveness app in the world. which the genius of Miss Jeannie created. And thank you, sweetie, for all the, I don't even know, thousands of hours you put into understanding and then being able to put that into a format that anybody can pick up and use on a minute's notice. You don't have to spend 35 years. You can pick it up. There's the worksheet, fill in the blanks, and that's it. Jeannie, I think, was talking about the fact that there was a book club that we did, and she put the video of that. I assume it's in the notes today. It's also on the website. But we took a young lady who knew nothing about forgiveness, and we walked her step by step through that worksheet process right from scratch. She was quite confused and didn't know what end was up with forgiveness. And so we were able to just guide her right through and into it. And she went right into some ancestral dynamics, a memory of her grandmother, talking to her about some traumas that were matched the pattern that she was in that had happened with an ancestor of hers. So, you know, there's an example there. And along with that, there are at least 20 other examples on the website. If you go to whyagain.org, you'll see the microphone, click that, and then just drill down into the links that take you to the special radio shows where either Dr. Tim or Jeannie or myself have walked step by step with somebody through the whole forgiveness process. If you really want to understand it, listen to all 20-plus shows. Each one has a different nuance, a different question, a different slant, a different person doing a different piece of work, and each one of them contributes to comprehending how this process works. Start putting the pen to the paper and watch how life changes. I promise if you actually use it on a consistent, persistent basis, you will not end up like Paul, saying things like, why is it the things I hate are what I do and the things I would do I cannot do? You won't be saying that. You will, in a consistent way, as you do your work, you'll be more and more empowered to do and say exactly what you want to do and say, and you'll be freed of the propensity to do and say things that you find yourself being embarrassed about or damaged or hurt. The technology's there. It's free. Go for it. Pass it on to somebody else. Our commitment is to make it available to literally every mind, heart, and being on the planet. Cost free.
And Michael?
If you, yes, sweetie?
You have a hand up and we're down to 11 minutes.
Okay, well, let me finish just one more thought or two.
Okay.
So download the app. And there are two different forms. There's a simpler version and then the deeper version of the reality management forgiveness process. Start to use it. Put it to work in your life. And support us. Find somebody. You know somebody who's in desperate need of the tools. Pass it on to them. Inform them about it. Work with it. Gain an experience of it and share the experience with another. And or if it's impacting your life in a positive way, supporting you, go to our website. There's a donate button. Support us. We are doing everything we can do to make this as freely available as possible on a global scale. And aside from a very simple, minimalist type lifestyle, everything that comes in goes into the next project of how can we make this available to more and more people. And join us for the book study, because that's just one more way we're going to be supporting people and putting it to work. So, Miss Jeannie, let's say hello to the hand that's up.
All right. It's area code 610. You are on the air. I believe it's Susan.
Howdy, folks. All right. We're going
Well, welcome, young lady.
I have a pile of questions. Michael, that was a great talk. And I have questions.
Thank you.
Starting with a Delaware camera. Yeah, it was
yes.
Good. This is a nitty intellectual question. What
okay.
kind of a picture of the oak tree did it show? Is it a generic oak tree or is it the literal oak tree that's going to come to life if it's planted properly?
Well, my take would be that it's somewhat like perception, in that the frequency pattern that is in the oak is going to be reflected into a structure that it will ultimately end up becoming. And, you know, it's actually been years since I've seen these pictures, and I think Jeannie's got links on the website if you want to go read more about it. I mean, there's one set of pictures I remember looking at was a picture of a fetus in utero at 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, and 6 months, and you could see the whole developing fetus. All four pictures were taken the same day. Now you say, well, how's that possible?
Holy
well, you know, at day one, does something go into the single cell that's been conceived and say, well, let's see, I need to put instructions in for day two, and then on day two say, oh, I need to put instructions in for day three, and on day 200 does it say, oh, I need to go in and put instructions? No, the instruction set is there; it just unfolds. And so, if you like the television signals in my room, if I turn the television on, I've got the right decoder, I can see what's happening on ABC or NBC or CBS or whatever. And if I have the right decoder, which is what the Delaware camera is, I can see what that, which is in front of the lens, if it's tuned properly, I can see what it's going to become.
Wow, the implications for that, of that are huge. Like, for instance,
monumental.
If, yeah, like, do we have our whole selves? Is it imaged right away when we're first conceived, and we could, it shows us as an old person, maybe even a dead person? Or, you know, I mean, I'm not asking you to answer those questions.
Yeah.
My mind's just exploded with all the possibilities.
Well, my take would be that the whole unfolding process is there. Everything that will ever, that is structured into the single cell at conception, is there and available if we have the mechanisms to tune to it. Everything that's ever going to unfold in that person's life, except for if the being wakes up and chooses to originate as we're designed to do, then the being is going to write new information into the structure, and there's going to be a shift and a change. So, you know, at the age of 10, the child who's tapped into what their purpose is perhaps has changed their whole physiology. And if you took a picture of them at the age of 10 and compared it to the picture at conception, they'd be two totally and completely different things. And then maybe at the age of 30, you know, what energetic patterns have been added or removed, forgiven, that will change the outcome.
So free will is intact, thank God, and we can actually have an influence on what we become.
Absolutely. We have the ability to reach in, and anything that's structured and programmed, maybe from 20 generations ago, if we know how to access it, which is what first century Aramaic forgiveness empowers us to do, we can access it and throw it out of the structure so it never has to unfold. And if we have our imaging faculty, remember one of the faculties of the soul we talked about in the codependence intensive is the imagination, the ability to image in, to bring in a new frequency that can restructure everything. There's free will.
Okay.
Now, of course, kings don't want you to have free will, so they're going to structure us with all kinds of rage and fear and guilt and grief, so we never wake up from it. We stay asleep and follow the program as inserted by the king. You know, you go back into the scriptures, and they talk about kings, and then they say, don't ever form contracts with them. They've been at this too long. They know how to run the game. Don't ever get involved with them, but find the power in you that was called Ruka Dukucha that will, one, when you give permission with your free will to remove what doesn't belong, it will remove what doesn't belong, and then that power will teach you the truth of what's possible for you, will give you a whole new level of understanding, comprehension, capability, and change the game.
Wow. So,
and what if one of the frequencies that's there at conception, which is the frequency of death, what if death is just a frequency that's been put into the structure, and because it's there, we die? What if we learn to remove those death frequencies, those energetic patterns that don't belong, remove that overlay? Then what's possible?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a very high thought. I understand what you're saying, and I don't think I'm going to be able to do that in my life, but I love the thought and the possibility. Holy mackerel.
And if you insert it into your bloodline, who will in your future bloodline be able to actualize that thought? And will you be resonated right back into the bloodline to continue with the process?
Wow.
Now, I shared that back, probably 6 or 8 months ago. It might even be longer than that now. I don't know. Time flies. But I was doing a still point session, and I had this, I was, my eyes were closed. I'm breathing away, and I'm inclined to point my eyes downward. And what I see is just this vast, unfathomable field of darkness with just throughout it, small, tiny lights throughout the whole vast array of darkness and an uncountable number of small lights in that. And what I was told, what I was shown in that moment was that I was looking at my ancestry, and the darkness was the unresolved pain. And the request was, am I willing to be the conduit to access and process out that pain? And I agreed. I said, yes, I will do that. I spoke that to all of my ancestors. And interestingly enough, at the instant literally that I spoke that to all of my ancestors, I literally verbalized that out loud. My phone rang, and it was my son on the phone. Now, I've never had a conversation with my son about ancestry or, grandfather's, nothing in that regard. But literally the instant that I said that out loud in my still point session to my ancestors, I will handle that. The phone rang, and my son was on the phone. He's, Dad, I'm on Ancestry.com, and I need some answers about some of our ancestors. That was pretty good confirmation for me.
That
was, that was a pretty powerful confirmation. It's like, okay, we're on track.
Wow. Okay, that's amazing, and it's too bad we have too little time because I have a few more questions, but I wanted to ask how...
Well, we have another show tomorrow. We can continue.
Great. How's Dad, and how's the coconut working in his noodle?
Well, I went to see him yesterday. Jeannie took the day to just take care of herself yesterday, and I went to see him, and he was doing pretty well, seemed pretty sharp mentally. He was eating better. The nurse was saying, he's really been eating, and so he looks like he's moving in the right direction, still challenged with walking and such. We've got some new therapists coming in to work with him, and so we'll just keep holding the space.
Good. Oh, good. Okay.
And we're down to the last less than a minute, so I'm going to say thank you for putting your hand up and asking questions, and let's, make note of those other questions you got. Let's continue it tomorrow. That'd be awesome. If you have the space.
Yes, I do. I do. I can.
Okay,
I've been in and out a lot, but yeah, I can do tomorrow.
Okay. Well, I won't plan anything for our intro tomorrow. We'll just start our conversation right off where we left it here. Sweet. All right, everybody. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. An awesome gift to give the world. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.